Katra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really getting into some deep water, intellectually speaking.
We certainly are.
We're diving into Catherine Belzy's work on post-structuralism. Now, that might sound a bit heavy, but it's this theoretical movement that honestly fundamentally rewired how a lot of people think about, well, everything. Language, truth, even who we think we are.
And it matters so much because Belzy gets right to the heart of our most stable, you know, common sense beliefs.
Things we just take for granted.
Exactly. Like, if you've ever wondered why certain ideas just feel so solid or why just one word can seem to hold so much weight, right, Belzy gives you the tools to kind of take that apart.
Yeah, so our mission today is basically clarity. We want to take these concepts that sound, frankly, a bit like academic jargon, things like difference or the symbolic order.
Which can sound intimidating, yeah, right, and show you why they're actually a really practical toolkit, especially for navigating, you know, the world today, all the information flying around, questions about identity.
Mm-hmm. And the goal isn't necessarily to find one single neat answer to everything. It's more about realizing that maybe the instability of meaning, the complexity, isn't a bad thing.
Or maybe necessary for critical thinking.
Precisely. It opens up possibilities. It's not about despair. It's about potential.
Okay, so let's start with Catherine Belzy herself. Who was she?
Right. So Catherine Belzy, she lived from 1940 to 2021, was a really distinguished British literary critic and cultural theorist, professor emeritus at Cardiff University. Her whole career was pretty much dedicated to tackling these big, challenging ideas in critical theory.
And what made her stand out, I think, is that she wasn't just like creating more complex theory on top of complex theory. She was an amazing explainer.
Absolutely. A synthesizer.
Yeah. She looked at this dense French theory, you know, Derrida, Foucault, Lacan, which can feel really philosophical and maybe a bit detached.
And she bridged that gap, didn't she? Especially for English-speaking readers. Her book, Critical Practice, was foundational for that.
Totally. It was like she understood exactly where the reader's common sense thinking was coming from, and she could gently guide you through the logic of post-structuralism without making you feel lost.
She made it usable. That's the key thing. Accessible, but still rigorous.
Okay, so let's get into the core argument then. What's the central idea in Belzy's work on post-structuralism?
Well, the big takeaway is that things we usually assume are stable, like what a word really means, or having a single unified personal identity, or even objective reality itself.
A bit of bedrock stuff.
Right. Belzy argues these are, in her words, radical illusions, not things we discover out there waiting for us.
But things we make.
Exactly. Actively produced or constructed. And they're produced through these constantly shifting systems of language and, you know, cultural codes, things that change over time and place.
So she takes aim at the foundations of traditional thinking, basically.
Pretty systematically, yeah. She challenges three main pillars of what you might call traditional humanism, stuff we rarely even think to question.
Okay, pillar number one.
The belief that language is, like, transparent, like a clear window onto reality. You say tree, and boom, the real essence of tree-ness appears.
As if the word just perfectly reflects the thing.
Yeah. Pillar two is the idea that yourself is this coherent, whole, independent I, that you're the single author of your thoughts acting freely.
The captain of your own ship.
Mm-hmm. And pillar three is the assumption that reality itself is just out there, solid, objective, something we can know directly, and that, you know, history is marching towards more and more accurate knowledge of it.
Okay, so Belzy's argument is that once you really examine how language works, those three pillars start to crumble.
They really do. It all starts to unravel.
And that's where the sort of revolutionary potential comes in, right?
Yeah.
If these things we think are fixed and natural are actually constructed,
then they're not inevitable. They're contingent. They depend on history, on culture, on language.
Which means they can be questioned, changed.
Exactly. It gives you critical awareness. Realizing reality is constructed means you can start thinking about how it could be constructed differently. That's powerful, both politically and personally.
Okay, let's dig into the mechanics then. How does Belzy actually build this critique? Starting with language itself, the crisis of meaning.
Right. You really have to start with Ferdinand de Saussure, the linguist. His big insight was about the sign, the word, basically. He said the link between the word, like the sound, D-O-G, that's the signifier.
And the actual concept of a dog, the signified.
Is arbitrary. There's no natural, God-given reason why that sound means that animal. It's just a convention, an agreement within a language system.
Okay, that makes sense.
But then, crucially, he also said meaning isn't inherent in the word itself. It's relational. A word only means something because it's different from all the other words.
Like cat isn't bat isn't mat.
Precisely. Meaning arises from the differences within the system. Hot means something only because it's not cold or lukewarm.
Right. So difference creates fizzing.
Right.
But then Derrida comes in and what pushes that even further.
He takes that instability and runs with it. His concept of difference, spelled with an A, is key here. It combines difference with deferral.
Deferral, like putting something off.
Kind of. Think about looking up a word in the dictionary. Let's say you look up justice.
Okay.
The definition might be fairness. So you look up fairness. That might say equity. Look up equity. It might point back to being just.
Oh, you're just chasing definitions.
Exactly. You're sent along this endless chain of signifiers, each word pointing to another word, not directly to some final stable meaning out there. Meaning is never fully present in any one word. It's always deferred, pushed along the chain. It's unstable.
Wow. So the big insight there is language doesn't just describe the world.
No. It actively constructs the world for us. It sets up the categories, the relationships, the very reality we perceive.
Okay, so if language is this shaky, slippery system, what does that mean for us, the people using it, the I?
Well, that leads straight to the next pillar, Belsey tackles, the decentered subject. If language constructs reality, maybe it constructs the subject, the I, too.
So the idea of a unified conscious self is also a construct.
Poststructuralism argues it's basically an effect of language, a kind of necessary fiction, perhaps.
That feels really counterintuitive. I feel like I'm thinking my thoughts.
I know. It's a tough one. Belsey draws on Jacques Lacan, the psychoanalyst, to explain how this sense of self gets formed, but also fractured right from the start.
How does that work?
Lacan talks about the mirror stage. Imagine a baby, maybe 6 to 18 months old. It sees its reflection in a mirror. For the first time, it sees itself as a whole unified image.
A complete picture.
Right. But that image is external. It's over there in the mirror. Lacan says this is a fundamental misrecognition. We get our first sense of a unified I by identifying with an outside image. So the self is kind of alienated, split from its very beginning.
Because it's based on something outside itself.
Exactly. And then as we grow, we enter what Lacan calls the symbolic order. Basically, the pre-existing world of language, law, social rules, culture, everything that was already there before we arrived.
We just get plugged into it.
Pretty much. We learn language, we learn the rules. And when we learn to say I, according to Lacan, we're not expressing some unique preformed inner self. We're taking up a position, a pronoun placeholder within that huge symbolic system.
So the I isn't the source. It's more like an effect, a position in the network.
That's the core idea. The subject is decentered, produced by language and culture, not the other way around.
Okay, moving on. The third big area is power, knowledge, and discourse, mainly drawing on Foucault.
Right, and Foucault's insight about power was huge. He said power isn't just repressive like a king saying off with their heads. It's also productive.
Productive? How so?
It circulates everywhere through institutions like schools, hospitals, families, and it actively shapes how we think, what we consider normal, what categories we use. It produces kinds of knowledge, kinds of subjects.
And this connects to discourse.
Yes. Belsey explains Foucault's idea of discourse as more than just talking. It's a whole system. Knowledge, practices, rules that defines what can be meaningfully said or thought about a particular topic at a particular time.
Like the discourse of medicine defines health and illness.
Exactly. Or how the discourse of law defines criminal and citizen. These discourses create the very categories they seem to describe. They have real power.
And Foucault famously linked power and knowledge.
Inseparably. Power, knowledge. He argued that what gets counted as truth or objective knowledge isn't discovered in some pure, neutral way. It's actually produced and maintained by the dominant discourses backed by institutions. Power shapes what we accept as true.
So truth always serves certain interests.
That's the implication you have to consider, yeah. Whose truth is it?
Okay, and how does this apply to, say, reading a book? This leads to the death of the author, right?
Right. Drawing on Roland Barthes, Belsey highlights this idea. It doesn't mean the author literally drops dead.
Phew. No.
It means that once a text, a book, an article, even an advertisement is released into the world, the author's original intention doesn't control its meaning anymore.
So the meaning isn't locked inside the text, waiting for us to find the author's secret message?
Nope. Meaning is actively produced by the reader in the act of reading, interacting with the text within their own context. The text is liberated from the author.
That really shifts the power, doesn't it? From the creator to the, well, the reader.
Absolutely. Which leads us nicely into Derrida's practice of deconstruction.
Which isn't about destroying things, despite the name.
Not at all. It's a careful, critical reading practice. Belzy shows how deconstruction works to reveal the hidden assumptions and internal contradictions within any text, whether it's literature, philosophy, political speech, anything.
Like finding the cracks in the logic.
Sort of, especially revealing hidden binary oppositions like mind-body, nature-culture, male-female, rational-emotional.
Things we often think of as simple opposites.
Right. But Belzy, following Derrida, points out these binaries are almost always hierarchical. One term is privileged, like mind over body, rational over emotional, and the other is seen as secondary or negative.
Deconstruction messes with that hierarchy.
It shows how the inferior term is actually crucial for defining the superior one. They depend on each other. By exposing that dependence, you kind of unravel the hierarchy and open up space for new ways of thinking, new meanings.
Okay, so bringing this all together.
Yeah.
What are the big themes or messages we should take away for, you know, everyday life?
Yeah.
How does this help us?
Well, one huge theme is that critique of binary opposition we just touched on. Recognizing how much of our thinking relies on these simple, often hierarchical pairs, male-female, black-white, sane-sane.
And realizing they aren't neutral descriptions.
Exactly. They often carry hidden power dynamics. Just recognizing them is the first step towards maybe questioning or transforming them in how we talk and think about social issues.
Okay, what else?
Another key theme is what you might call the productivity of contradiction. We're often taught that contradiction is bad, illogical, a sign of failure.
Yeah, be consistent.
Right. But post-structuralism, as Belzy presents it, suggests that maybe inconsistency, ambiguity, contradiction aren't failures. Maybe they're actually fertile ground, sources of new ideas, creativity.
So instead of forcing complex problems into simple, neat boxes.
Maybe embrace the ambiguity, tolerate the complexity, see what emerges from the tensions.
Interesting. And a third theme.
I'd say the democratization of interpretation. By challenging the ultimate authority of the author or the expert or the institution to say what something really means.
It opens things up.
Massively. It validates multiple perspectives, alternative readings. It empowers you, the individual reader or thinker, to trust your own critical engagement and not just passively accept what authority tells you.
To question the official story.
Exactly. It encourages intellectual agency.
Belzy's work, and post-structuralism generally, is full of these kinds of really potent, memorable ideas or phrases. Let's touch on a few key ones.
Okay. Perhaps the most famous and maybe most misinterpreted is Derrida's line, "There is nothing outside the text."
Which sounds like saying the real world doesn't exist.
Yeah, but that's not it. As Belzy explains it, it means our access to reality is never direct, never unmediated. It's always through systems of meaning, language, cultural codes, representations. Through texts, in a broad sense.
So we can't step outside of interpretation to grasp raw reality.
That's the idea. Our understanding is always textual, always constructed.
Okay, another big one related to what we said earlier. The author is dead. Long live the reader.
A great summary of Barthes' point. It really signals that shift in power. The reader isn't just digging for the author's treasure.
The reader is actively making meaning.
Yes. A creative participant, not just a passive consumer. The meaning gets co-created in the act of reading.
Okay, and linking back to the self, the subject is not the origin of discourse, but its product.
That hits hard against our usual idea of unique, autonomous individuality, doesn't it?
It really does.
It reminds us that the very way we think, the language we use to form an I, our desires, they're profoundly shaped by the cultural and linguistic systems we're born into. We're effects before we're causes, in a way.
Wow. And one more from Foucault. Power produces knowledge. Power and knowledge directly imply one another.
Crucial. It forces you to always ask when someone makes a claim to truth or objectivity.
Whose interests are being served? Who benefits from this knowledge being accepted as true?
Exactly. It links knowledge directly to power structures.
So these aren't just abstract philosophical points. They have real-world applications.
Absolutely. Think about media and political literacy. Post-structuralism gives you tools for deconstruction.
So instead of just asking, is this news story true?
You ask, okay, how is the story constructing reality? What words are chosen? What's emphasized? What's left out? What binaries are being set up? Like us versus them. How is it trying to shape my desires or fears?
It's like looking under the hood of the message.
Precisely. It's a way to diagnose ideology at work.
And what about analyzing social issues?
Well, it's incredibly helpful for understanding social constructs, things like race, gender, sexuality. Belzy's approach helps you see them not as fixed biological facts,
but as categories whose meanings have histories.
Exactly. Meanings that change over time, that are fought over, that are tied up with power struggles. If you see gender, for example, as a historical construct rather than a natural essence,
it opens up possibilities for challenging traditional norms, for activism.
Definitely. If it was constructed, it can be reconstructed. It provides a framework for understanding how change happens and how to push for it.
And on a more personal level, does it offer anything there?
I think so. Personal liberation, perhaps. If you understand that your own identity, your ambitions, even the things you feel limited by,
aren't necessarily fixed parts of who you are.
Right, but are shaped by cultural narratives, mm-hmm. by the discourses you've absorbed, then maybe you have more freedom than you thought.
Freedom to question those narratives,
yeah.
to rewrite them for yourself.
Yeah. It allows for resistance to those societal expectations for a kind of self-transformation because you realize the script isn't set in stone. You're not trapped by the story you inherited.
So, wrapping things up,
yeah.
what's the single most valuable takeaway from diving into Belzy's work on post-structuralism?
For me, it's the cultivation of a deep, but healthy skepticism. Skepticism towards anything presented as just natural, obvious, or common sense.
Questioning the given.
Always. Understanding that the reality we experience is constructed, that it's contingent. It makes you realize it's also transformable. And that's ultimately hopeful, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And Belzy's crucial message, I feel, is that this isn't about nihilism. It's not about saying nothing is true, so why bother?
Not at all.
It's about understanding how meaning and power work together, how power operates through the very ways we make sense of the world. And that understanding gives you, well, a toolkit.
A practical toolkit for analysis, for critique, for change in your own life, in society.
It's definitely a rigorous intellectual workout, reading Belzy. It really does rewire how you see things, how you read the world.
Which in the end might be the most important skill we can have.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.